Welcome back to Following Noadonna Stormlight Podcast. This week is episode 196, and we're in chapters 5 through 7 of Shadows of Self. Paul, how are you?
Marvelous. Another week, another week, am I right? A week of Sanderson.
I can't argue with that. Elliot?
Doing great. You said episode 196 as if that's like a number of special significance, which... that's a lot. That's crazy. Don't get me wrong, but apparently there's something special about 196. I don't know.
Did I emphasize 196?
Sounded like it.
Okay. We still haven't nailed down plans for episode 200. We need to figure that one out.
We've got 4 episodes to worry about. That we'll be fine.
That's true. We got like a month. Yeah. Elliot, do we have any other itinerary before we roll intro? I don't think we do.
I don't think so. Got a lot to talk about, so better roll.
We do. You're right. Let's roll intro, and then we'll get a chapter summary from Elliot. All right, Elliot. Chapters 5 through 7 may not seem like that much book to cover, but quite a bit happens in quite a few words. What do we have here?
These chapters were also longer than I'm used to for Mistborn Era 2. I was getting used to shorter chapters, and then all of a sudden it's like 20 pages per chapter. But anyway, chapter 5. Wax is still trying to solve the case. He's putting his Sherlock Holmes hat on and trying to piece together the bits of evidence. So he goes to his grandmother's village, who apparently she's a terrace and lives in a whole village of terrace people. It's described as like a forest in the middle of the city. It's like, I don't know, they're living in Central Park or something like that, I guess.
Well, I was also thinking Central Park, but I think it's even more than that. He describes about how the trees come up like through the road.
Yeah,
and like distort the ground, and like you can't even if the trees weren't there, you couldn't get a carriage through there because it's all rough and stuff. So yeah, I thought that was interesting.
Yeah, very unique, very interesting conversation as well, but does pick up a lead coming out of that with a steel runner that they can go chase down. Meanwhile, chapter 5 was kind of crazy, actually. It was cutting back and forth between Wax, Wayne, and Maracy a little bit hectically. I was having a hard time almost staying with the threads of thought. But while Wax is doing that, Wayne goes to Ellendel U and visits a college girl who's apparently the daughter of the man that he killed, that he's still trying to get over and still like provides money to support them.
Yeah, he's paying for her college.
Oh, yeah. And let's see, Maracy is just kind of doing her job. We get like some scenes in the office where she's talking about office politics and various stuff like that. Chapter 6, Maracy goes to hear the governor give a speech and picks up some interesting information along the way. She ends up stopping one of his guards, the governor, from shooting him, uses her little reverse steel bubble to stop an assassination. And then Wax and Maracy and Wayne, or maybe it's just Wax and Wayne, go to the steel runner's apartment and find that she's dead. Yep. Pick up some more information there. Then Wax, in chapter 7, puts in his earring and has a good long conversation with good old Harmony, where we learn lots of interesting things that I'm sure we're going to spend quite a while talking about. And then ultimately Wax and Maracy interrogate the man that Maracy captured and prevented from assassinating the governor, and they kind of walk out of that conversation a little shaken and realize they got to get to the governor really fast in order to protect him. And I skipped over a lot because we're going to get all into it, but I think that's the main points.
I mean, you already said quite a bit. So, yes, there's 3 chapters, but I don't know, I feel like 30 different topics. Anything stick out to you, Paul? Where do you want to start?
I mean, it's so much pressure when you ask where I want to start.
Should I warn you next time?
Yeah, that's totally fine. I can deal with it. I'm a big boy now. I think I'm curious to talk about Wax's past in the village and the Steel Runner. We talked about it briefly on the last episode of, like, if it's not a Steel Runner, then this means somebody was shooting out of a speed bubble, which would be, I guess, sort of an interesting plot twist down the road. But, you know, we're pretty set that it is the Steel Runner. They say Adashwi, is that the name of the...
Adashwi, yep.
Yes, the name. Which reminded me a good bit of Leshwi from our other stories. Mm-hmm. Anyways, that I mostly what I want to talk about with this is the grandmother. The grandmother and Wax, their like relationship. You can tell it's a bit straight, a bit awkward, a bit like a extended history of disagreement. Not that I necessarily think that aspect is that important, but we know that the grandmother is very like anti-violence of any means. Wax's philosophy that he talks about here is basically, I'm not just murdering people, I'm keeping people safe by eliminating the threats of the bad people, right? And I don't know if there's anything super deep we have to dive into with that, but that kind of as the opposite of this grandmother here being like, you know, you shouldn't hurt anyone, period, I guess, or shouldn't do that. It is kind of interesting, and it almost reminds me a bit of the Sazed ethical discussions, religious discussions, I think, of Era 1. I don't know if there's anything that important to come up with this, but maybe it'll become part of Wax's story along the way of finding some, I guess, thinking more about the, I don't know, ethical side of his life as a lawman. But I'm curious if y'all have any further thoughts on this. I guess not like that it's a major deal, but I did enjoy this discussion. I actually really enjoyed the conversation that they had. I found it really engaging. So,
Elliot, speaking of Waxillium's grandmother, would you like to take a stab at how to say this name?
No.
And then we'll throw it back to Paul for quite the spell check.
I had a feeling this segment might be coming back when I read this name, because any pronunciation I can come up with for this name just sounds absurd. So, yeah. Wax talks to his grandmother for a while. Her name is apparently Waffendahl. Waffledahl? Waffendahl? Waffendahl.
Oh, I'm in trouble.
Yeah, good luck.
I was gonna say, you never have to say it.
So the thing, the way I know that I'm in a lot of trouble with this is, no, I don't actually remember how they say it. I'm trying to remember. I don't have a clear, maybe I just let it breeze past whenever I heard that, you know, but no, I don't. Are you able to enlighten me?
It's funny that you put this in the outline, Elliot, because in the audiobook, which I'm doing as well, it sounds like a normal name. You don't stop and be like, what was that? No, they somehow Michael Kramer just throws it as a normal name, and you're like, okay, yep, got it. I'm trying to remember exactly how he says it, but I'll find it here in a second. But Paul, do you want to try to spell it with what Elliot gave you, and I'll go find the pronunciation of this?
To answer your question, do I want to try to spell it as Elliot said it? No, I do not. But in the interest of being a good sport, I will do my best. Can we get a Can I get a recap? I think I heard a lot of sounds going out of what's your ultimate best guess?
Yeah,
it's gonna be really deluded, guess for like you. A game of telephone. So yeah, gonna be going off of not how I remember it, but how he's saying. Anyways,
simple as I can try and attempt it is Vwafendal.
Okay, I'll just give it my best guess.
I'm gonna every say time this. You say that. Hold on. Every time Elliot says that, it's. I don't remember what the book says. I'm trying to find it, but that is nowhere close to what to what Michael Kramer said.
Do they? I'm trying to remember. Does he say something almost like Fendal or something like that? I have no idea. Anyways, I'll just run through my best guess. I suppose I'm going to say that this starts with WVA. I'm going to go WVA. Fendahl. That's my best guess.
You are darn ridiculously good at these, actually.
You're close. It's VW.
Okay, so I was right about that.
You said WV.
I meant VW.
Okay, VW.
Okay, so I've got it mixed up, I guess, in my brain, but yeah.
It's VWAFENDAL, no H.
Really? Wow. Okay. All right. Well, I'm proud. I'm proud that I did way better than I thought I would.
I'm proud of you. You did way better than me.
Yeah. Okay. I appreciate the last going back to hear it repronounced, though, actually was very helpful. It is spelt about how it sounds or how you said it. I don't know. Yeah. I don't remember how it's supposed to sound. But it does sound like that. It's just not something that you're used to sounding out. Like, okay, VWA, you know.
Mm-hmm. Anyways. So historically with terrace names, you kind of just like say every letter that you see, like in its entirety. Like you don't skip anything, you just say everything. But that's not how this is. Because I believe in the I'll have to go look at it. We can figure this out next episode, but I believe there's a letter in the first name or in the first half of the name that they just completely skip, and then it makes it sound like a normal name. I don't know. We'll figure out exactly how to say it by next episode. I don't remember how they say it, but anyway, Vwafendal. she is the grandmother of Wax, and She is of a pacifist nature. She's like an elder in this little village of terrace people right in the middle of Elendil. Like it's not like out in the meadows or like somewhere outside of Elendil. It's supposed to be like Central Park, like Elliot was saying. It's somewhere right in the middle of Elendil. And she's this elder in this group of terrace people. And the short conversation she has with Wax seems to be more reveals that she's quite pacifist, that even if she has strong issue with Wax and his lawmanship, that she asks him, well, you know, when you find a criminal, do you always shoot for the chest or do you try to spare their life? Do you shoot for the leg when you can and stuff like that? And Wax tells her, life's not that simple. If you're shooting a gun, you have to be prepared to kill the person on the other side of the shot. So there's some, you know, pretty stereotypical lawman versus pacifist conversation going on here. What did you guys think of the terrace village? And apparently she likes Wayne. That like she Wax says things to himself, oh, I should have sent Wayne instead because she likes Wayne and Wayne could get more information out of her. But Wax comes to get information about any steel runners that she might know. She does know who he's looking for. What is her name? Oh, Adashwi. And she's found dead later. But what do you think of the village?
I'm picking up on some pretty strong tension in Wax's upbringing, because apparently he lived with the terrace with his grandmother for at least a year, and was they were trying to bring him up in these more pacifist, more traditional, maybe terrorist beliefs. And yet we also know that Wax spent a lot of time being raised by his uncle, right?
Yep.
And so I think a clash of beliefs, perhaps, in Wax's past. We have even his name. We have Waxillium Ladrian, which just sounds like a gentleman of the city, steampunkish. And yet, Grandma V, as I called her in my notes throughout, is calls him by his terrorist name that he apparently has, which I guess try to pronounce as well, but is also kind of funky.
That one is way more straightforward. It's a Synthew.
Okay, yeah, that's about what I would have guessed.
Right. It's way more closely related to Idashwi, which you kind of just say every letter you see. It's a Synthew.
But one of the things that Grandma V talks about that I thought was really interesting is that she also talks about how the mixing of his allomancy and ferrochemy is dangerous or not right or wrong somehow. And I kind of keyed into that.
Sacrilegious.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
And I keyed in on that as maybe some cultural or religious hangover from or carryover from the Lord Ruler. The terrace were, I don't know a way to say this nicely, pretty abused by the Lord Ruler. And is this just kind of ingrained in the terrorist culture now that someone who mixes allomancy and ferrochemy is not to be trusted or is sacrilegious or is just wrong or not okay? Is that a consequence of the events of Era One? Lord Ruler specifically?
I hadn't thought of that, but I think you're right that would be a direct reference to trying to avoid exactly what the Lord Ruler did.
Right.
1500 years ago, 1300 years ago. The information we get from Grandma V is there's a steel runner girl, young woman, who's gone missing, says she has been visited by the spirit of her dead brother or dead uncle?
Brother.
Some family brother, okay. Been visited by the spirit of her dead brother, leaves the village and goes and lives on her own like a month ago. And then the next chapter, Wax and Wayne find her dead with a hole carved out of her chest and in her apartment. So that would seem to assume that someone hunted her down and hemolurged her steel running out of her at some point in the recent past.
Would imply that, wouldn't it? I think it would. One thing that I have to, that I keyed on into like right away was this whole, like, she's being visited by someone in her past or something like that. It's very Ruin-esque of seeing Ven seeing her brother again, Spook seeing Kelsier, all these things, seeing that. But don't you have to have a hemorrhagic spike of some sort for a ruin to appear? I don't know if it still works the same. And it's obviously not just ruin now, it's harmony. Still don't know 100% how that works, if it is still both or if it is just one unit.
So,
but
to briefly answer your question, in the last chapter of Secret History, Spook puts in a hemolytic spike and can see Kelsier, who has neither ruin nor preservation. He is simply a cognitive shadow. So you could then argue it's then less directly tied to ruin and more just a investiture on Scadrial type of thing.
That makes sense. So but either way, we're assuming some form of spike. Either that or she is crazy, but I would, and seeing things. But I think it's safe to assume that that's not what we're getting at. And she's just mentally seeing things, but that this is some way hemolytic or something.
I came to the conclusion that it was a little bit more straightforward than that by the context of chapter 7 and what Harmony tells us is this is a Chondra who went and ate old dead brother's bones and started appearing to her to try to influence her. That was the simplest solution I came to, which Harmony seems to imply that said Chondra did the same thing to Bloody Tan, and went up when it ate Bloody Tan's bones, and that's how Bloody Tan has been being cited. So I went more of a straightforward answer with it's just a Chondra doing Chondra things, but maybe there's a cognitive shadow in here somewhere.
I almost went an even different direction with it in that I kind of dismissed it, the haunted by the spirit of my dead brother, because of chapter 7 where we find her dead and probably hemorrhaged. I took all that as Yudashui is not the suspect. That
sure, right.
Yudashui is not even really relevant to what we're about to our crime we're trying to go down of whoever took her power via hemallergy is the one who did the murdering with the steel running, and that Yudashui is just a victim.
I think it's pretty easy to summarize that Chondra appeared as the brother to lure her out of the village, get her to live alone, just to kill her so that she wouldn't be missing, to get her spike.
Right.
Or to spike her, I should say. So we have a AWOL Chondra. What do you guys think of that? We haven't seen a Chondra yet. Here they are.
Well, maybe we have. We just didn't know they were a Chondra.
Okay. You know? Uh-huh.
That's... We shouldn't forget it because we just read Mistborn Era 1, but I came out of Mistborn Era 1 telling myself that I would always have a hesitancy about anyone I ever meet on Scadrial because they could all just be Chondra impersonating who you think you're talking to, right? But here we are, not even... Just over a book into Era 2, and I've already forgotten that fact, and I'm already trusting that everyone who we're speaking to is who they say they are, and not second-guessing every single person, which maybe I should be.
Yeah, we talked about Bloody Tan last episode, right? Could be a Chondra.
Do we want to get into the Harmony conversation now, or should we save that?
Is there anything else specific we need to cover before that conversation? I mean, Yudashui, investigation, murder, hemallergy. The governor, do we want to talk about the governor before we get into the Harmony conversation? So, jumping over to Marisi, she is... she's been hired as the assistant to, like, the chief of police of Elendil. His name is Goradel, I think is his name, or Aradel.
Yeah, there's like Aradel and there's Reddy.
Reddy's the lieutenant guy who doesn't like her.
Yeah. She learns that she stole his job, or the job she has is the one that Reddy wanted.
Right. Yeah, okay, Aradel, who I always... he's named after Goradel, who's the Era 1 guy. Do you remember the Era 1 guy who's... Spook gives him the letter to give to Vin, and Marsh decapitates him on his way there. That's Goradel. Aradel is named after that guy.
Got it.
Aradel is some non-noble cop guy who's like pretty honorable. He's highly recommended by pretty much everyone. He retired, came back out of retirement to be the new Elendil chief of police after last book. So he's, for as far as we know, a pretty stand-up guy. Hires Marisi to be his assistant, and then the rest of the office now holds that against Marisi because they feel like the guys who have been there for longer were slighted by her, who got the assistant job before they did. Anyway, Marisi's not making very many friends besides maybe Aradel, the chief of police guy. So Aradel is the Aradel's our main cop that we're going to be talking to back and forth. And Maracy he sends Maracy to the governor's speech to kind of be some heels on the ground, fly on the wall type thing of how does the crowd react? We need to keep tabs on how the people of Ellendale are doing, how they're feeling about some inflation prices, how we're feeling about some unrest in the city with the governor's brother being tied up with all these criminal guys. So they're trying to keep the heat off the governor. And Maracy shows up to the governor's speech, stops an assassination from one of his guards, and then they interview him or interrogate, I guess is more accurate, at the end of the episode here. But Maracy gets to use her powers again. That's cool.
In a very effective way for a power that was originally deemed useless. She's now kind of saved the day with it twice now.
Hmm.
So that was cool. I did note that throughout this, it's mentioned a couple of times that while Maracy is helping everybody and saving the governor's life, she's also slowly compiling evidence as much as she can find against the governor to show that he's corrupt. She's not ready to like come forward with it yet, but she's strongly suspicious of it or wants to bring to light the crime circles of the city that maybe go all the way back to the governor. And so she's just kind of slowly gathering information on that. I think that was mentioned a couple of times, which is, I thought kind of ironic that she's there saving his life while also building a case to maybe try and take him down in the future.
Sure. I mean, she's a law student. She wants everything to have due process and legal.
Oh yeah.
Like, you know, legal representation. She doesn't want him to die by any means, but she is certainly prepared to go against him if she finds he is corrupt. So,
yep. Because we might get, I think we're going to get sucked into a much larger discussion here in a second. I want to mention it now. You talked about the interrogation. They capture that guard dude. They lock him in a room with no metal in it so that you can, you know, lock up an Allomancer and not worry about them coin-shotting their way out. Wax goes to talk to him. The cops let Wax go in and talk to him. They don't learn too much other than the guy gives Wax a coin.
Mm-hmm.
And Wax freaks out about it. And that's like all we're told. And there's like a few more paragraphs and then the chapter ends, and that's as far as we've read so far. I guess maybe question directed, I guess, probably to Paul, since Trevor, I'm sure you know the answer. Did you pick up on that, Paul? Did you notice anything I didn't? Why is Wax so afraid of the coin that the random guy gave him?
This may shock you, but I don't know. I do remember hearing this when I was reading this and thinking about that, but I couldn't come up with anything super notable on what this might actually be. I didn't have any good guesses why this coin is such a big deal. I'm sure we'll learn something about its maybe a calling card for maybe a calling card for some like group or organization or something like that. I'm not sure. Some villain, but
yeah.
Right now I definitely don't know.
That's a good point. We should remember this because if the calling card idea, that could come up again if we start to see this as a thing of someone leaves a coin behind at their crime scenes. Could that be a link we start to tie?
Yeah, I'll read the coin reveal. Waxillium wiped off the coin with his handkerchief. He inspected it, then turned it over. Then he grew very still, paling. He stood up suddenly. "Where did you get this?" he demanded. Rion only continued humming. "Where?" Waxillium demanded, grabbing the man by the front of the shirt. "Waxillium," Marcy said, running up to place his hand on his arm. "Stop." He looked at her, then dropped Rion. "What is that coin?" Marcy asked. "A message," Waxillium said, shoving the coin in his pocket. "This man won't know anything of use. Bleeder knew we might capture him. Do you have plans for tonight?" She frowned. Why are you asking?" "The governor's attending a party. Steris says he won't cancel despite what has happened. And this is the sort of thing she's always right about. He'll want to be up front. He'll want to put up a strong front and won't want his political enemies to think he has anything to either hide or fear. We need to be at that party because I guarantee Bleeder will be." And that's the end of the chapter. So, yes, there's a little bit of a cliffhanger of what exactly Wax saw in that coin, because I had to read it again to see if it revealed what was on that coin or not, because I know, but I didn't remember if we knew at this point.
And this is going to lead us back to that discussion about Harmony and who Bleeder is exactly, but yeah, I want to know what it is that Wax recognizes that then gets him worried.
Yeah, that's a good question. I think we should now dive into this quite interesting conversation between good old Sazed and our hero Waxillium. But right before that happens, who's the coach driver? Who's our favorite Cosmere-spanning carriage driver? I think that's he's like showed up at least three times as a carriage driver.
Cue the sound effects. Sound the alarm. Wah, wah. Hoid sighting.
Hoid is here. And I don't remember when this book is written, but I'm trying to remember if this is going to be a more interactive Hoid or if this is going to be more Mistborn Era 1 Hoid.
I was gonna make a comment on that, Trevor. I was gonna say this felt a lot more like fun Hoid, like we know him. It felt a lot more notable than our Era 1 Hoid, which wasn't super, super noticeable, you know.
More interactable than Alloy of Law Hoid, who is non-existent.
Ah, yes, or was he?
Well, I mean, you could draw some conclusions here. If Wax's coachman is Hoid, that there's a coachman in the first book, so it's right. It's probably Hoid. But as far as I noticed, the letters HOID did not show up in the previous book.
That is true. But I'm just curious of whether it'll be more of a Oathbringer Rhythm of War Hoid, where he's actively engaged in the plot, or if this is more, oh, there he is, like a Warbreaker Hoid, where he's just there to tell the story and then he's gone in for like a chapter. So this was published in 2015, by the way, for anyone interested. So like right before Oathbringer, the year before Oathbringer. All right. We have Wax puts in his earring for a little bit of prayer, and Sazed directly has a conversation with him and lets him know what he's going to be doing for this book. So we have the first big reveal, which is Sazed says, "I have a Chondra who's gone AWOL. I don't know what's going on," which is, pause right there. If Sazed doesn't know what's going on, who does? So that's an issue. He says, I don't know what's going on with her, but Bleeder is her name, and apparently she was the personal Chondra to the Lord Ruler back in the old Mistborn days. So the Lord Ruler had like a personal Chondra who he sent her on missions and stuff. This is her. She's removed one of her spikes, so Harmony cannot directly control her, and now she's going off on her own, doing her own thing. Thoughts?
Some interesting bits there. The whole remove one spike but keep the other gives you cloaking against Harmony is kind of strange, and it sounds like Harmony doesn't even, Seiza doesn't even fully understand it himself.
Right.
He talks about it almost as if it's a glitch in the matrix. I can sometimes see her and then I can't. I don't know quite how she's figured out how to do this.
And he knows that he can talk to her, successfully talk to her, but then he also knows that she doesn't have to listen. Like she doesn't have to care, but he does know that he can directly contact her.
But there's another part of this, which is that the Chondra need both of their spikes to have full, I think we debated the right word in an episode a while
sapience.
Back. Sapience. Yeah, sapience. And so Bleeder is running around with one spike, which allows her to go undetected, but leaves her with like limited consciousness, or I don't know if I came up with this word from my notes or if it's in the text, but kind of like she's a bit insane. She's not fully of her own mind. Something along those lines.
Right. And even if she is fully of her own mind, having direct tie to Ruin for the last 1,000 years and then not having direct tie to Ruin for the last, or what does that do to your brain? If you do suddenly have free will and you've never had that before, what does that do to a Chondra?
But we've seen in the past how powerful or deadly the Chondra can be. So rogue Chondra does not sound like a good recipe.
Yeah. I do think it's interesting that our first Chondra introduced is going to be an antagonist as opposed to our protagonists from our previous era. So I think that's cool, pretty cool.
We did end era one with some pretty antagonistic Chondra, so it's definitely believable for me.
Are you talking about the second generation who took over?
Yeah. Yes, yeah.
Harmony mentions that it's kind of like an offhand comment of I've given you this paradise. I've given humans this paradise, and you guys don't have to evolve and innovate because of all the stuff I've given you. And that was a mistake. And Wax is, and then he said, oh, you should have had the radio like 100 years ago. And Wax is like, the what? what was that? Go back. Hold on. And then Seiza doesn't expound upon it. So I think that was a pretty funny line.
There's a lot to read into that line as well. I mean, there's the obvious face value conversation that we're having, which is a interesting philosophical discussion of is life too easy in post, what's that word? Reading it always messes me up.
Catasandra.
That's another, I would have butchered that pronunciation if you tried to make me say that word, because it does not spell like it sounds. Post-Catasandra Scadrial, is life just too easy? Are they living too cush of a life? They're not developing because they don't need to. They're just kind of complacent. Okay, yeah, maybe. Whole other conversation we can have about that sentence. How does Seiza know what a radio is? Because as far as we know, although maybe this has changed in not too long ago books that we've read, Scadrial seems to be the most, this version of Scadrial right here seems to be the most technologically advanced that we've seen so far. With, as I'm saying that, maybe the notable exception being Yumi?
I was thinking of Yumi. Yumi feels very modern. They have like phones and stuff and TV.
I think Yumi is explicitly post Mistborn Era 2, though. I think that's definitely confirmed.
So Maybe I'm going way deep into a single word that's mentioned here, but this tells me, this makes me want to say there's one of two things going on here. Either there's another planet somewhere out there that is more technologically advanced, further ahead on the track than Scadrial is, and Sazed, via his shardish knowledge, knows about or has been to this planet and knows what a radio is, or this is some kind of glimpse into the future thing where Sazed knows what's supposed to happen or is going to happen and therefore knows a radio will be developed someday. By the way, you people should have figured this out by now. I must have made life too easy for you because you haven't.
Let me read a quote about this, the radio thing. This is Sazed speaking. You were to have a radio a century ago, but you didn't need it, so you didn't strive for it. You ignore aviation and cannot tame the wilds because you don't care to study proper irrigation or fertilization. The radio? What is that? You don't explore, Harmony continued, ignoring Wax's question. Why would you? You have everything you want here. You've barely progressed technologically from what I gave you in the books. Yet others, who were nearly destroyed... I made a mistake with you. I now see. I still make many. Does that ruin your faith, Waxillium? Does it worry you that your god is fallible? Did you catch that one line? Where he says, you've barely progressed technologically, yet others who were nearly destroyed, ... There's something else going on.
I don't think catch that first time around.
Is this something going on Scadrial, or referring to other planets?
Good question.
If it's on Scadrial, what are we talking about? Are the Koloss making some big technological advancements? Are Archondra? You know, I could see that.
The third book, the Koloss mechs come over the basin and take it down Elendil. Yeah,
they fly on their airplane jet.
Yeah. There you go.
Drop bombs, you know. I feel like this has to, in my head, this logically has to apply to other planets, other worlds, which Sazed can now see.
Okay.
And how advanced they are growing. And so then, you know, naturally that will push our people in the future to advance a lot more. Thus, we'll have Mistborn Era 3 one day.
I think the Koloss idea is, I don't think we can toss that out. It sounds absurd, but I've been curious where the Koloss are. A lot of them died. I was ready to assume all of them died and that Koloss weren't going to be a thing in Era 2. We've seen multiple people now referred to as, oh, he's got Koloss blood, which how you That's interbreed true. Humans and Koloss, I don't know if I want to learn more about that, but
good question.
They've got Koloss blood somehow. So are the Koloss out there flying biplanes around? They might be.
Didn't Sazed... Hold on. I don't want to skip past that sentence you just said. that was quite funny. Didn't Sazed at the end of Mistborn Era 1 grant the Koloss like humanity back, and so aren't...
Oh, didn't he like... He gave him a choice.
Yeah. So either they could like remain their hemallergic selves, or they could like become a human again. And maybe that's where we get our Koloss blood from.
Yeah. It's true. I think you're right about that. I think so.
Maybe. Other thought, since we're as cosmere aware as we are, I can spin these kinds of things. Could this be a off-planet reference to the planet of Cell that we've learned about somewhat recently from the people in Elantris, who we've kind of pieced together secret history and other places, that they might be the most technologically advanced or cosmere aware or powerful beings out there? Okay. And we know that the shard on their planet, or I forget now, two shards,
Devotion and Dominion.
Yes, yeah. Two.
Who have both been splintered a long time ago.
Exactly, who were both splintered a long time ago. Could that be what Sazed is referring to here of they were almost destroyed, but they powered through the destruction of the shards on their planet and are now, because of that, having to fight for it and survive, have now become much more advanced than everyone else around them.
Yeah, I do like that. And with Secret History, we know that Cell knows about Scadrial because they were there waiting for Preservation Shard to pick it up. So what is there Cellish system people talking to Scadrians? Yeah, absolutely. I want to read another part of this conversation between Harmony and Wax. "I hold both ruin and preservation," Harmony said. "The danger in carrying these opposed powers is that I can see both sides, the need for life, the need for death. I am balance, and to an extent, I am neutrality. But Bleeder used to be one of your own, and now she's acting against you," Wax said. "She used to be of preservation. She has moved to being of ruin. Both are needed." "Murderers are needed," Wax said flatly. "Yes." "No. The potential for murderers is needed, Waxillium. I, the personality who speak to you, agree with your indignation. But the powers that I am, the essence of myself, cannot allow me to take sides." Interesting. Interesting philosophy there, Sazed.
This is the most pressing thing that I've been wrestling with and thinking about through this book. When we ended Era 1, we had this like, oh, thank goodness, Sazed is in control of these shards now.
Right.
Thank goodness. I still feel that, and I think, I predict that I will continue to think that. Because I think Sazed is a good whole vessel of this power. If someone's got to do it, you know, is my thought. I think he's not a bad one to do it. I think the power, the way that the shards work, is so powerful and so drastic that it is tough and challenging. At the end of the previous book that we read, there's like a brief moment where I think there's a brief moment in there where Sazed shows up, Harmony shows up, and kind of says that. Maybe that was this book. He says, "I sent you. I sent you, Wax."
That was last book.
Yes, that's right. Of basically implying this, like, how he's orchestrating things behind the scenes. And it's not like, oh, he is strictly saving everybody, but he's sending Wax to save people, if that makes sense. You know, the, like, orchestration of, you know, someone else moves us. Lawman, you know, it could be that. But anyways, this Harmony dynamic is what I'm wrestling with the most. Of there has to kind of be good and bad for there to be harmony, I think, you know? And so I'm nervous, you know, I'm like, what goes up must come down. If Wax and if our characters are continually getting good and better, is there going to continually have to be worse and worse other people? Or I don't know. I'm really eager and curious to see how this plays out and how Harmony plays out. One, because, you know, it's going to be very pertinent to the story. And two, I feel like this is going to provide a very clear picture in my mind, or a clearer picture of kind of how rejoining shards and things like that on the big cosmic scale can work or could work or things like that. I'm very tuned into this. This is probably my number one thing for this series is how the heck does Harmony work? How does it go? What does he do? How does he do it? Why does he do it? You know, so I'm very tuned into this.
And yeah. The implications of all this going forward in the Cosmere, I think, are going to be huge too, because we're expecting Stormlight 5 to maybe launch us onto the intergalactic Cosmere level of perhaps it's going to matter on Roshar what harmony would do in a situation, because we might just be having conversations across planets because the impacts of what Odium and or other big bad guys are doing is going to impact the entire Cosmere. So how does Sazed react to these kind of things? Yeah, that might be really relevant in the near future.
I know someone's going to comment on it, so I'm just going to say it now. We will be covering the two letters between Harmony and Hoid that are in Words of Radiance and Rhythm of War. We will likely go back and cover them after Shadows of Self and before Bands of Mourning. So we'll probably take maybe half an episode or a full episode to go read those letters, and there'll be some of that interplanetary conversation that you're talking about there, Elliot, because with the context of understanding Harmony and the issues that Sazed is having in the previous book and this one and going into the next ones, I think is pretty interesting.
And he, more specifically in our situation that we're in right now, I think we had discussions on it last book, and it seems like we're going to kind of pick up where we left off. But the dilemma that Harmony and Wax are kind of wrestling over is, or it revolves around, I think, the free will. Harmony says, I've tied my own hands. I think he's done that because he wants to give this world free will. He wants to be the balance that creates the world where humans do have the power of choice and can impact the world around them for good or evil, for preservation or ruin. And we've seen that an excess of preservation or an excess of ruin has some bad consequences. So says it's trying to walk the balance and letting humans do their own thing, but of course is now faced with lots of moral dilemmas of, are you really going to stand there while you watch someone murder a bunch of people? Are you going to stand there while you watch civilization stagnate and not develop because they're too happy and haven't had enough challenge in their lives? Like, where's the, what should you do as a god in this situation? It's a fascinating question to tackle in a fantasy world, one that like you don't typically have to answer in your day-to-day life.
And I think it's really funny juxtaposing that with Wax specifically, because Wax is the lawman. He has the Spider-Man line, right? With great power comes great responsibility. If I have the ability to help this person, I then have the obligation. But then if you turn around and apply that to Sazed, and Wax has already and may as well in the future, you have the ability to save this person. Why did you not? And I think it's a really interesting question, because Sazed is doing his best to create a utopia for humanity, free will, go. And Wax is like, no, hold on. There's this whole crime syndicate on the bottom of this city that you're not touching, and you absolutely could. Interesting question. Anything else?
I briefly want to talk about Wayne, just briefly. More of a general, like, you know, how do we feel about Wayne so far? Wayne, I mean, I certainly enjoy Wayne. He's very comical. Like, he's very funny. I think he may be the funniest, like, Cosmere character that we have overall. We've had other comedic relief characters, I think, but Wayne feels way more like a fully fleshed out character that he will continue to be, more so than some of our other comical characters in other stories. But his whole thing with this family and the paying for the daughter's college and everything, like we've talked about this a bit. But it feels briefly, but I want to bring it up more. It feels like this is where his arc is going to be, if you will. It feels like the conversation with this girl is basically like, it effectively ends on, I will take your the daughter being like, I will take your pity money, but I will never forgive you. I will never,
right,
you know, be happy about you, I guess, or anything like that. I will never forgive. And so I wonder if, in my mind, that this is setting up kind of a longer stage, maybe story of reconciliation with Wayne and this family. Or it could be not that. It could be him continuing to do what he does and just accepting that. Just accepting that as in place of being forgiven, just kind of having an attitude of service, I guess, towards this family for what he did in the past, which is pretty honorable. It's very Wayne-esque of how it all plays out and how it gets pretty ridiculous. But I was curious to ask y'all, I guess, your thoughts on it. I guess for Elliot, do you think that's where the story's going to go? I don't know if I can ask Trevor that because he probably knows. But do you think that's how it will go? And, you know, I guess your general thoughts on Wayne as we move forward.
What I will say real quick before Elliot answers, I think Wayne is actually a big make it or break it piece for Miss Mornara 2 in general, because if his humor doesn't work for you, I feel like he kind of ruins a lot. Like, yeah. He's kind of like Shallan. If Shallan, like, if the character of Shallan really is a sticking point for you in Stormlight, you're going to have some issues getting through some scenes, getting through some parts of some Stormlight books, because Shallan's a little weird. Shallan's has some weird dynamics going on. But if it does work for you, then I think it all meshes together really well. I think that's the same with Wayne. Wayne is really weird guy, crude jokes. Like, if Wayne being on screen bothers you, which I could totally, it doesn't bother me, but I could totally see why it would for some people. I think Miss Mornara 2 kind of falls flat, but I think Wayne is kind of just a pivotal character for how you see Miss Mornara 2.
I do guess that there's going to be more to Wayne than what's on the surface. I think we're headed for there's a reason why he's so heavy on the comic relief, the distraction tactics. And we've already seen, I think, some of what's beneath the surface and the trauma there. And getting to see some scenes where we explore that, like with the girl at the university that he goes to visit, I think it does a lot for the story. It helps it because it makes him such a deeper character. And it, even if it's awkward and painful and cringy that you have to watch Wayne do this really, I don't know, awkward's the best word I can think of for it, exchange with this girl who he killed her father. It's uncomfortable to read, but it creates a depth to the story that's not just the silly banter, which I think is very cool.
Well said. I agree with that. I like that there's an element of seriousness, that we see something that Wayne takes seriously and cares about seriously, even if he doesn't say it like that. If he says it, you know, offhandedly.
And so the Shallan comparison is actually a really interesting one, because Shallan goes to the very extreme of, like, multiple personalities to compartmentalize her different aspects of her life, from the silly love story with the cute boy to the incredibly devastating trauma of her past. Wayne might be just a slightly less extreme version of that, where maybe in future books we're going to have to see Wayne maybe take his more serious side a little more seriously and realize, no, you can't just be the guy who cracks jokes to not have to talk about things all the time. Maybe we're going to have to see him face his past a little more than we've seen so far.
Good stuff. Anything else?
I feel like I have one more. I scanned through the notes. Oh, one random thing that I wanted to bring up just to see the look on Trevor's face when I say it. There's a weird bunny trail in one of the Marcy point of views, where she's like walking through the streets and she walks past a market. And for like an entire page, I only bring this up because Sanderson does not do this. Sanderson does not stop to give you a page long description of anything. that's a bit of an injustice. He does do it occasionally, but not, he's not a super descriptive writer. He's going to tell you what the character sees and then move on. But we stop for like an entire page for Marcy to wonder about the economics of Ellendale and how the person trying to sell her an apple has raised the price ridiculously and what the impacts of that are. And there's all these threats of food shortages, but they're not really real food shortages. It's just maybe a dip in the deliveries that have come for the month. And so food is coming, but they're gouging all the prices anyway. And what does this mean for the politics and the poor people and the rich people? And I'm just reading this whole page like, what? Why is this relevant to, yeah, why is this relevant to anything that we're reading about, which I've read enough Sanderson to know he's very intentional about everything he does. So I read something like that and think, wow, spending that much page real estate on something random is not typically something Brandon does without a reason. So now I'm trying to decipher what's the possible reason for me to need to know the backstory of some of the Ellendale food economics. Why is that going to become relevant later? Or did Brandon just happen to read an article about economics the day before he wrote that and decided to devote a whole page to it? I don't know.
And this is also kind of tied to it. At the end of chapter 5, we get Paul. I'm curious to ask your opinion on this, because when I was reading Mistborn Era 2 for the first time, I was extremely confused by that. Did you understand what you were listening to when you got to this? This is an excerpt from the broadsheets, the newspaper for the day, and it's between chapters 5 and 6. And Michael Kramer reads the whole thing at the end of the chapter. He goes for it. Did you understand what you were listening to?
I did. At some point, I did catch on. I knew that's what I was listening to. I did not necessarily understand why I was listening to it. I was like, I guess this really gets me into the world. It's like ads, isn't it? Like commercial ads for things of that time, which was kind of fun. It was kind of neat to hear, honestly. It was kind of neat to see.
I was going to ask you guys, does he literally read everywhere? Like, they're long.
The whole thing. So he starts with market opening, EBSE stocks plus 0.5, commodities minus 2.1. And he just goes through the whole thing. And you're like, what? What?
Is that like a solid 4 minutes in the...
Yeah, like 6 minutes at the end of the chapter.
Wow. Yeah. I do remember being confused because it was rather abrupt.
Uh-huh. But all children love sooty puffs. Like, come... Real fur.
I remember the puppy thing. Yeah.
Which is a reference to Ten Soon, by the way, if you didn't catch that. Soony pups and Ten Soon.
I did you not catch that.
Get a little I have one.
I was gonna say, that's funny. I was gonna say it was kind of neat. It played well into the whole like 1920s industrialization. You know, commercializing things, I guess, which I thought was neat.
And this is not super relevant for most of our listeners, but at the Dragonsteel convention that you guys went to for the Lost Metal, they were handing out full papers of this. Somebody in Dragonsteel printed out like a full paper of the Ellendale Daily and was just like handing them out to people. I thought that was so funny. I have one of the copies right here. Anyway, just little quality of life immersion things that I appreciate. So why are we talking about Ellendale economics? What's it going to mean, Elliot?
I don't know. I think it's going to be relevant. I think that page was put in there for a reason. Brandon does not spend that much time talking about something if it's not going to be tied in somewhere. So why are economics going to be important? I don't know. In the first book, we talked a lot about like train shipments and aluminum deliveries and stuff like that. This was more focused on like food. So I wonder if I don't know. Maybe with
stock prices.
Well, I'm thinking maybe bigger. What if you know our ominous hints that you were maybe pointing out of? Maybe there's something bigger going on in schedule as a whole, and the people we've seen, they don't go outside the basin at all. They don't explore. Harmony just said that, right? You guys aren't exploring. You need to get out there. What if there's something out there that is a whole nother civilization, a whole nother development, Coloss and biplanes, like whatever is going on out there, that maybe those people show up and food becomes a lot harder to get than it used to be. And the direct implications on the poor people of price gouging because there's only so many apples to go around is going to become an important part of day-to-day life in Ellendale.
And then there's the question, if that happens, at what point does Sazed step in?
Exactly.
When would he deem it necessary to interfere?
Mm-hmm.
Interesting questions. Anything else?
Nothing on my list.
All righty. Let's do a Stormlight review. We have 8-6 in Elliot's favor. Paul scored a point, even though Elliot nailed the quote ID on the first try last week.
Very proud, Elliot, for the record, that one.
All right, Elliot, your chapter name is Momentum.
Momentum. There's a bunch of different scenes going through my head for this one. It could be a lot of different things. I think I'm just going to have to go with Way of Kings, going on bridge runs, and Kaladin starting to feel like he's maybe figuring it out, like starting to think, oh, we could have a plan here. We can do this. We can save some lives. We can bring these people purpose. They're not just in the worst possible situation, even though they are. So they're kind of building momentum. I've got about 43% confidence in that answer.
Incorrect. Paul?
Momentum. That's a hard one because that's a pretty vague term. I feel like this is the least confident I've ever been in my chapter summary answer. Momentum. I think this is, I'm just going to really go out on a limb. I think this is the chapter that Renarin is jumping off the hill in shard plate over and over, and the bridge crews are being trained by Zyle, and that's the momentum is there, you know, entering their training phase, you know. So it's the training arc.
Incorrect. I believe that chapter name is Zyle or Swordmaster, I believe. The chapter title Momentum is the first Dalinar flashback chapter in Oathbringer, where Dalinar and Sadeas and Gavilar are uniting, conquering the Alethi kingdoms, and momentum is the word they have for the thrill before they really define it. Like, as they're fighting and as they have the thrill, they keep their momentum up by killing as many people as possible. There you go. All right. Paul, quote ID, who's talking? This thing, it isn't natural. The Radiance betrayed mankind. Their powers left them, and they were cursed. Everyone knows the legends.
I think that this is Rock. More specifically, Numuhuku Makiakiaya Lunamore, if you need the full name.
Incorrect.
Okay.
Elliot?
Can you read it again?
This thing, it isn't natural. The Radiance betrayed mankind. Their powers left them, and they were cursed. everyone knows the legends.
Oh, I can't remember the name. But I can process out loud because Paul's already answered. Although you are going to answer back with the response, right? If I get this wrong.
Depends on how confident you are then.
Shoot. This is a... If I describe anything about this, it's going to potentially give away the response character. What's the... I'm using some strategy here. I'm going to pass.
Because wow.
I think I know who this might be, or I could be completely wrong also, but I think I know who this might be, but I can't even give you a generic guess because the generic guess I would give you would tie in who I think the response character is going to be, which might hand Paul the answer here because I cannot think of the character's name. So I'm going to pass and hope that Paul gets the response wrong, which I think I might know.
This is gamesmanship at its finest.
Yeah, we're getting some new metagame updates, you know, with this one.
All right, Paul, here's your response. So you think I'm a curse?
Can I get the full quote and response back?
This thing, it isn't natural. The Radiance betrayed mankind. Their powers left them, and they were cursed. Everyone knows the legends. So, you think I'm a curse?
I have to go with my gut. And I think this is Kaladin talking to Syl.
You are correct. The second speaker is Syl, and this is Kaladin. The first time he walks under the shadow of a bridge crew hut and sees that he's glowing. Very nice.
Is that what you were... the scene you were thinking of, Elliot?
No, I was thinking this was Venli and the like Void Spren.
Timber that, or
oh, no, no, no. Spren. The
oh, the little Void Spren who's really annoying and like patronizes her the whole time.
Yeah.
Yes. Yes.
Okay, okay.
And this was part of like the kind of lies that was being fed to Venli in part of that, but that Spren's name was what I was dying over. But I didn't want to even mention Venli because I thought your response was going to be clearly Venli, and I wanted to steal that answer. But yeah, no, you're spot on. This is Kaladin.
Yeah, the response made a huge leap in my my guess there. I thought it was Rock first off, simply because of the phrasing of he always says like this thing.
Yes,
that was my full. I don't remember this. I don't remember this being said, but I would fully believe if it was at some point. So I was fully going off of the phrasing.
I almost left off this thing because it is a very Rock thing to say, and it's very misleading for the diction. I did almost leave it out.
The context of the quote makes sense. Like I don't think I'm fully justified in my guess. I think the full context of the quote doesn't really sound like a Rock quote. So anyways... I'll take it.
All right, Elliot, here's your review. What book are they reviewing and what did they review it with? This one's a little vague, I apologize. Not that they all aren't. I give up. Boring, overlong, storm this and storm that. The audible version probably made it even worse than it was.
The audible version made it worse. All right.
Crazy take, by the way. Absolutely insane.
Right?
They must not listen to Audible ever, and this is like the first thing they read up, so they didn't have any comparison or something. Who knows?
See, this is going to be another one of those funky ones, because this is one where I immediately just want to say, well, obviously this is Way of Kings, because he wouldn't have gone further. But we've made that mistake before. Back to
too much logic there, yeah.
Yeah, Paul has, I think, correctly surmised that these wildly incorrect takes often don't follow logic. So
which is the entire reason I introduced to this segment, because these are so funny based on the ones that they're on.
I can't not use logic to deduce what is going on here, though, because it doesn't even make sense to do anything not Way of Kings. But you have to... You didn't even finish the book if that's your take on the Way of Kings. Like, you stopped right before the end of part four. This is... you know what? I'm going to second guess myself. They made it through Way of Kings. They liked that one, so they kept going, but then felt burned by Words of Radiance. Probably didn't finish that one, though, because there's a pretty exciting ending of that one, too. This is Words of Radiance. This is a 2 out of 5.
All right, Paul.
Can you read it once more for me? You can read it quickly, I guess.
I give up. Boring, overlong, storm this and storm that. The audible version probably made it even worse than it was.
I'm going to go with, I'm probably going to regret this, but I'm just going to go with my face value first hunch, which is the Way of Kings. One star. Which I feel like I'm going to regret, but I'm just going to stick with it.
All right. Elliot, congratulations. You have thought along with this reviewer. This is a 2 out of 5 for Words of Radiance.
Wow.
I don't know how you got to that answer with that.
But simply you did. By doubting the reviewer is
right.
Is Paul, what it is.
Paul is right. You just have to go with the illogical answer to the irrational review, and you get it.
That's really true. Man, I didn't even follow my own advice. That's tough.
All right, so it is 2-1 with that swing back for Elliot.
Yeah.
Paul, you're going to answer this first. Neither one of you look at your map. Name one country that borders the Pure Lake. Paul, you'll answer this first.
I have a decent guess, but I'm now absolutely questioning every single country on Roshoi, just about. Well, I'm really running through so many. I'm not going to talk about them out loud at all, though, in case I...
I've already got an idea if that
strong
gives you freedom to think.
There I'm are, really bouncing back and forth between two.
There are 4 correct answers.
Okay. The one that I'm struggling with actually is there's one that I'm afraid might not actually be a country. It may be like, I don't know, technically not a country or something.
There is one city, and if you give me that city, I'll give it to you, but there's no way you're getting that city over the countries.
Yeah.
There is no way you're naming that over the other one.
Okay, so question for my thought process as well as I answer. Is it like if I say one, do I just get the point, or is it like if Elliot can name more or something like that, should I try to name multiple if I know multiple? Potentially,
we could do a tiebreaker if we both get.
So here's what I'm gonna do. Call this rigged if you would like. If you get a correct answer, I will throw it to Elliot, and he can nullify your answer, and then I'll throw it back to you. And you have to name a third one. Does that make sense?
Okay. Yes.
Because Elliot's gonna get the point if you don't for the week. If you don't,
this
correct.
Okay. I'm going to go ahead and go with Erie. Or Erie Ollie. That's the name of the people. Erie.
Incorrect.
Oh, dear. Okay.
Elliot, do you have a guess? You have the point, but for an extra 3-1.
I do have one guess, because it's a rather silly name, so it's kind of stuck in my head. But I was trying to run back through all the Zeth interludes, because he pops up in random countries and murders people.
He does. That is true.
And some of those countries, I'm pretty sure, border the Pure Lake. But the one that stuck in my brain that popped up as soon as you asked this question was Baba Tharnum, just because it has a goofy name, and I know it's in that region.
Baba Tharnum is a correct answer. Nice job.
Well done.
Your other three, which two of these you could have gotten. I don't think I've ever heard the other one. Baba Tharnum would have been the one that you could have gotten, definitely. Marabethia, you've heard before. Tubela has been mentioned at least twice. And Yule is the country on the south side of the Pure Lake. I've never heard that before. And the country and the city in Yule that I would have also accepted a point for is Phu Namir. So
I was way off. For the record, all my thoughts were way off.
I feel like the south side of Roshar I know pretty well, and the Erie side I know pretty well, and you know the east side that we've been on, but that central middle next to the Pure Lake I'm not super familiar with, so
I need to brush up on my geography, my Roshar geography for sure.
Elliot, weren't you didn't you go to like a state for geography in like sophomore year of high school?
Yeah, like sixth grade, man.
Sixth grade? I remember getting towed along when I was like, you know, eight to some geography thing that you were doing. Anyway, thank you for joining me, Paul and Elliot. We will reconvene next week. I don't know the chapter splits for next week. That's all I got.
Further up and further in.
Everything's bigger in Texas.
It's not wrong.
The Narnia reference into that.
It's a saying, you know. I was just thinking.
It absolutely is.